Nurses and Hypochondriacs, the podcast that brings nurse experts, patients, and hypochondriacs together to discuss hot topics in healthcare. And here is your host, Ercilia Pompilio.
Hello and welcome, nurses and hypochondriacs. Coming to you here from the media center of the world, Burbank, California. Thank you for listening. Today's topic, very, very interesting one. What is happening to our teens? What's going on with our youth? So many crazy stuff. Our podcast number 9 today is called Sex, Tide Pods, and Shootings. A lot of wacky, wacky things going on out there. And, I'm glad I'm not a teenager. I'm glad I'm an adult. When I was a teen, things were not so crazy and stuff. But yeah, so we'll be getting into it today. But before we start getting into our interesting topic, I'd like to introduce my guest for the show. And my guest, she's an RN, she's a registered nurse, certified health education specialist, CHES. She has a certification in LGBT studies, and also she's a middle and high school health educator. She's raised 3 daughters into adulthood, and she survived the adolescent years, and she hopes you will too. She is the author of the book, Teen World Confidential, 5-Minute Topics to Open Up Conversations About Sex and Relationships. And she's also the president of the Illinois School Health Association. And she's a member of ZONTA. And welcome to the show, Kim Cook.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
Thank you for being on the show. And thank you for being on the show on your vacation. And you are in?
I am in the lovely island of Oahu in Waikiki. I'm visiting my daughter. She works here. And I thought it was a really good excuse to come and work for a couple of weeks.
That is so cool. And you went on a hike yesterday. Where did you go?
We did. We went to Manoa Falls, and it was beautiful. And then we sat on the beach, and she went surfing, and I got to hang with my grand dog. Anything's better than the Chicago winter for a couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's really nice. What's the weather like in Hawaii, in Oahu?
Oh, today it's a little overcast. I guess it is their winter, but yesterday was beautiful, 78 and sunny.
That's great. That's great. Have you gone to Duke's yet and had their fish tacos?
Oh, we went to Duke's on our last trip a couple months ago.
Oh, nice.
Are they good?
I love the fish tacos at Duke's. I go to the Duke's in Malibu all the time, and my favorite is fish tacos and Mai Tai, which I think Duke's has the best Mai Tais ever. So it's my preference.
I'm glad to know that because we're looking for places to go. So that's perfect.
Yeah, I love Duke's, and it's right there, I believe, right on the sand. It's been several years since I've been next to that Pink Hotel, right?
So yes, it's literally 4 blocks from where I'm
staying. Oh, perfect. You can walk there.
Yes.
Okay. So
I can.
So Kim, I want you to tell me your story before we start talking about our hot topics today and the whole media frenzy, the whole media fire that's going on, and how you got into writing a book and becoming an expert.
So I started when I was about 19 years old. I became a birth control educator at Planned Parenthood. And it was really great because I had all kinds of really interesting patients that came in. One in particular that I remember, though, was a 12-year-old seeking birth control. At the time, I really wasn't that much older than her, and I didn't have a lot of experience in the field. But I remember thinking, thank goodness that she's here for birth control. Of course, now that I'm older and wiser, I understand. Or probably other issues going on, but that was a different era for me. Moving on a little bit, I ended up getting my nursing degree, and I was a maternity nurse, and I worked in the maternity unit, and one of my very first patients was a woman about 18 or 19 years old. She came in delivering baby number 4, I believe it was. About 18 months later, she was back with her next baby. And I thought, how interesting. You have a 12-year-old coming in for birth control and an older teen giving birth. So I kind of have carried that scenario forward with me. I then became pregnant myself. I had 3 beautiful daughters. I was a stay-at-home mom for a while. decided to go back to work and become an elementary school nurse, which I loved. I will say that was one of the best jobs I ever had. But I got bored. So I decided to go back to school. And at the ripe old age of 45, I went back to Northern Illinois University and became a certified middle and high school educator. Yes, I was that token old lady in your classroom. So I was there with all the 18-year-olds. But as hard as it was, I got through it somehow, 4 years, and became a middle and high school educator, which was awesome. And during that time, I met some wonderful young people, one of which was a woman who identified as lesbian. And we became close friends. And she says, Kim, you've got to look into getting your LGBTQ certification. So basically what that means is I just have a little bit deeper understanding of the issues that the LGBTQ population deals with. So I found that super interesting and almost disheartening because of the things that I learned that, because it wasn't in my world before, I really learned a lot. Anyway, moving on, I became a health teacher. I was in the classroom for a couple of long-term sub positions, but one thing I noticed was the kids wanted to talk about sex.
I mean, what grade was that?
This was middle, so 6th, 7th, 8th, and 9th and 10th grade.
Okay.
So 11th and 12th grade, they are no longer getting sex ed, which is another source of confusion for me, but that's another podcast. So these kids, they want to talk about sex, and honestly, they only get it for a week or two at the end of health ed. So I discovered if I tied just about everything I could into sex, they would listen. Digestive system, respiratory system, anything. Bring it into sex, that's great. However, I had a parent. We were going to show a movie in seventh grade, and they talked briefly about homosexuality. And I wanted to head it off. You know, these are young people, and they tease and they joke, and I don't accept that. So I wanted to head it off before the video, and I said something along the lines of, you know, some people identify as lesbian, gay, bisexual, trans. We don't love it. It is normal. It's perfectly fine. No big deal. Well, the next day we got a letter from the parent saying, Mrs. Cook said it's fine to be gay and telling the kids they can be gay. Like it was a bad thing. And I'm like, no, it's the parents that need the education.
If right.
Gay, it's okay to be gay. And I'm not telling all students to go out and be gay because that's really not how that works. So that's when I started getting this red flag. You know, parents that need the education. We've got some good teachers right now. They can handle this. I'm in a different demographic that I can have a voice for the parents to say, hey, look, you know what? We need to talk to our kids. We've got to have this serious conversation because they're hungry for the information. The schools can give them the actual information as they should if they've got a really good health teacher. However, only parents can give them the value piece. Only parents can give them the piece that we want our kids to understand and know from our perspective.
Right.
And that's important to incorporate into that. So that's kind of how this whole journey ended up. And then I started a website and where the book came from. And here I am now doing a podcast. So this is how it goes. And I talk to parents and that's kind of the story of my
So you world. Started the book. The book was a blog first.
It was.
Okay, and then you converted your blog into a book. I saw that.
I did. So I took all the pieces, and the ones that I felt were most relevant, I rewrote so that it was in more of a book form, and I had an editor and blah, blah, and put it in a form so I could, you know, the best part about this book is it is quick reads. You can pick it up. You're sitting waiting for a kid to practice. Pick up the book. You can read two pages. You can learn something. You can laugh about something. You can feel supported about something and put it down and you're good to go. It's not a book you have to read. You can just read little snippets, which makes it really an easy read and something really nice to have in the car. And in fact, you can have your kids pick up and read a passage. I have a funny story about my husband has an employee who happens to have a copy of my book. And she has a daughter who I believe is 12 years old. And, you know, starting the conversation at that age is awkward. But she has it on her bedside. And one day she goes to bed and she looks at her bedside and the book's not there. And she's like, yeah, she walks in her daughter's room, catches her daughter reading the book, and she's like,
"Ah, interesting."
And the daughter looks at her and says, "Well, Mom, I got to learn about it somehow."
It's so true.
For the information.
It's so true. I mean, yeah,
they're ready.
Right. I remember when I was a kid, and my mom did not talk about sex at all. I mean, I learned all my sex education from books. I remember I went to a Catholic school. It was both female and male. And I remember going into the bathroom one day and I saw a bloody pad. Okay, a bloody maxi pad. And I was in the car with my mother, that day. I think I may have been in fourth grade. I'm not exactly sure. And I was in the car with my mother, and I go to her, and I said, "Mom, I saw a bloody pad, you know, on the floor." And she just about crashed the car. I mean, she didn't know what to say. She was just beside herself. Like, she was starting to freak out and panic. It was hilarious. My mother is an Italian woman. She didn't go to school here. Italian was your first language, and then she learned English and Spanish when she was working here, and she's a seamstress. She had her own business for many, many years, and so that was one thing. But I am a voracious reader. I lived in the library when I was a kid, and I checked out books like crazy, and you know, I remember checking out a book on anatomy and physiology and how your body starts to transform and going through puberty. So that's how I learned. I also learned from Judy Blume. You know, I read, don't you? Yes. Are you there, God? It's me, Margaret. You know, and I learned about my period, and I have the phonetic dyslexia, and I didn't even know how to say period. I thought it meant said, or I thought it was pronounced period. Like, I didn't know it was pronounced the same as period in a sentence. I was thinking it was, you were supposed to say it period, you know? I don't know. Very strange. But yeah, so that's how I learned. And I remember I learned about sex from her other book, Forever. Yes. And I know she's rewritten. I think she's rewritten Are You There, God? It's Me, Margaret, because it was very outdated. Even when I was reading it, girls were wearing pads with a belt. And I was like, what's a belt? Like, I didn't. Yeah, tampons are, so that was the bit of my education, and I've always been a self-educator and stuff, but I'm noticing in my practice as a pediatric nurse practitioner, parents do not like to talk to their kids about sex. Very few of them are open, and it's interesting to me, like I said, how I grew up with my strict Catholic Italian family and not really talking about those types of subjects. But these days, I'm like, a lot of these parents are educated here. I feel they should be more open with talking to their kids about sex. And I feel that your book is great on that. I mean, I was reading a passage about how we have on how pediatrician offices have birth control. And they, yes, we give condoms out. And a few of the clinics I've worked at have had condoms. But it's very interesting. I was interviewing for a job probably about 4 or 5 years ago at this pediatric practice or organization. And it was a Catholic-based organization, right? But it was federally funded, which is weird. So the first thing they told me in the interview, this guy, like, I think he was one of the administrators, he just comes out and he goes, "Listen," he's like, "you cannot prescribe condoms, or you cannot prescribe birth control. We don't give those out here. How do you feel about that?" And I'm like, I guess okay. I don't know what to do about that. I mean, I don't prescribe birth control anyway. I always send them out to OBGYN. You know, that's always been my practice. It depends on the clinic that you work at and stuff. But I just thought it was weird. I was like, but you guys are federally funded and you're not giving anybody out any birth control? I don't know. It was strange. I didn't end up taking that position. I just thought it was very confusing on my brain. So I was like, I don't belong here.
That's not good medicine anyway. You've got to.
You have to keep, I'm all about options. I give all my patients options. I let them decide for themselves. I give them as much education and, What am I? I'm losing my train of thought today. Anyway, I give him as much education and counseling as I possibly can. And and I leave an open door for them to come out and talk to me about. So can you tell me any parts of your book which you think are just very hot topics or things that you want to bring out or that your readers have come to you and said, hey, this section of the book is really great and I really love it, or I've learned so much from it?
Well, one thing, the book is full of humor, and I think that that's an important piece when parents are talking about sex and relationships, to bring the humor piece into it. Make it light, make it easy, make it fun. Don't take it so seriously. So I think people like, you know, that they feel supported. But as far as topics go, I think one of the biggest topics right now, and we've seen it all over the news, is the sex scandal with the Olympic.
Sure. You want to jump into that, and we could start with that then. Yeah.
Well, this happens to be, February happens to be Teen Dating Violence Month. So it's
interesting
that this is all, it's kind of interesting that this is all coming down now. Actually, it's been going on for a while, but we're hearing about it.
Right.
So that's kind of an issue about making sure that we talk about sexual abuse. Sexual assault, what is it? What does it look like? I mean, with the Me Too movement, oh my gosh, in the last year, 6 months, things have just exploded in this realm. What's appropriate? What's not? Who to trust? Who to believe? What's going on in it? It's become very confusing. However, it's become very empowering to women. So that's a super important conversation to have. Not just because we have had conversations with our young women, be careful of boys, what should you wear? All those traditional conversations that may or may not be appropriate conversations.
Right.
But what we haven't done is had the conversation with the young men about, hey, this is not cool. This is not a real woman with respect, a real man kind and considerate and respectful. We don't mansplain. We don't do the locker room talk, that it's inappropriate. We need to change that culture. We need to change that language. And it starts when the kids are super little.
I totally agree with you. And that goes with modeling, I think. Usually boys will model what their father is doing. So if their father is very chauvinistic, and if their father treats the mother like garbage or put downs and stuff like that, well, he's only going to do it to other women. Or he might see that and say, hey, I don't want to be like my dad. I want to be better. And I should hope so. But I agree with you that we don't do that enough. We don't teach our boys and our men how to treat females. Back in the day when I was dating, I do a lot of dating. I've been single for quite a while, and I do have a dating blog as well. And I've seen a change. I have very many facets to me and very many tools and stuff that I do. So I have a dating blog as well. And basically, when I started dating, when I was young, when I was 18 years old, I felt men and boys in general were much more respectable. They asked you out on a date I don't know. It was just different. It was just, I felt respected and empowered back then. And you just usually would stay with one person you dated. I went to school. I was dating my ex-husband at the time. And he opened doors for me. It was great. And it was very sweet and romantic. Nowadays, and I think it's with the internet and the media, that's all convoluted. It's like you have sexting, you have love bombing. And love bombing is when people will shower you with these compliments that they don't mean. Like, hey, baby, you're so sexy. You're amazing. Just to get what they want. So have you, in your teaching and in your education, have you talked about sexting? I mean, I don't really hear it too much. I don't know if it was a fad or if it's done. My patients really don't talk about it. So
it's alive and well. young people right now, you know, it's interesting. I was reading a little bit about this recently, about sexting, how when we were growing up, you know, you might go behind the bushes and show them a body part. And,
you know, yes.
You know, kind of, we all have our ways, each generation, of kind of showing how who we are sexually. And then sexting came along, which is and was shocking to all of us, because as we know, anything that goes on our phone or the computer, that's it. It's permanent. It's not going anywhere, and people can share it, unlike going behind the bushes and no one else is going to see, you know, that kind of thing. But I just read something recently, and that some of the perspective is changing, that this is the new way of young people expressing their sexuality.
Yes.
We shouldn't be as shaming of them. And I think that there's some truth to that. However, I think we also have to be really, 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 really careful about how we educate our young people about this. This is kind of a new thing. We've got to realize that this is what's going on, but how do we teach our young people what's appropriate, what's safe? I think part of the problem is pornography.
It's yes. Commonplace. Oh my gosh, yes.
It's awful. It's awful. The average age of a young person accessing porn is around third grade now. And they don't know what they're seeing. They don't know what's going on. And that kind of, you know, already the brain is changing. They're seeing this. They're not understanding that this is wrong. This is inappropriate. This is not real sex. People don't really do this. And all the implications that come with pornography, such as not treating women with respect, and expecting that there are certain ideas in a sexual relationship that women are submissive. And,
right.
You know, whatever you're watching, whatever that message is probably not true.
Well, there's no connection in porn. I mean, in porn addiction, that's a whole other podcast that I will be doing. But there is a disconnection. And then in the young age, in the teens, though, with the porn addiction, like you said, they're seeing this as normal. You know, there is no connection with sex, and sex is usually all about connection. The purpose of having sex is to procreate, you know? So you're having this bond with your mate because you were going to have an offspring and raise that offspring together. I mean, that's really the whole purpose. I mean, it feels good and it's great, and you do have this bonding that goes on with your mate, and I think that's really being lost with the whole porn industry and the whole porn addiction thing and stuff, and it is very, very sad. And it does change the neurotransmitters too in the brain, which fosters the addiction, just like any addiction and stuff. But yeah, go ahead.
When these 8-year-olds are accessing the pornography, it is changing their brain. It is changing what they're learning, all this, and bringing it into their relationships, which will obviously not be very healthy, or they have problems forming relationships. And we want
yes.
to have healthy, loving, committed relationships down the road. And this is a problem.
I agree. You know, one of the things that I wanted to talk about, too, is when I ask my teens, and I do a whole heads exam with them, with kids who are 11 and over, or 11 and over, because they can, here in the state of California, they can be in the examination room with a practitioner and not with their parent. So I do a whole heads exam, and I ask them about sex, but lately I am not hearing any of my teens having sex. Is this common? I mean, is it because of the media? Is it because of, you know, there's other things going on that kids are not thinking so much about sex and not having sex? I didn't look at my teen pregnancy statistics online to see if there was a decline, but what do you have to say about that?
Yeah, that's actually really good news for those of us in this world. So it used to be, I know. So it used to be that only education, federally funded education, was all abstinence only.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore we had the high pregnancy rates, we had high STI rates, sexual transmitted infections.
Yes.
Those are still high. And then the average age of first sex is still about 17, but less young people are having sex, initiating at a younger age. That's because we've switched that. We now understand that abstinence-only education doesn't work. Because if you don't give them the information, they don't know what they're not supposed to do or what they are supposed to do. Once you explain to them, this is what a sexually transmitted infection, STI, is. It's prevented. This is how pregnancy is caused. This is how you prevent it. And these are the goals that you might have for your life. These are what healthy relationships looks like. These are all things that go into a comprehensive sexuality program. And if we can really teach young people what this is about, they have the tools to make better decisions. And we have found that now they are waiting longer before they have first sex. They have sexual partners.
I've noticed that. Yeah.
And it's because we give them the tools, we give them the information.
That's great.
They don't know what they don't know. All of a sudden they've got some guy or girl who's maybe taking advantage of a certain, doesn't really know what's going on or how to say no, or perhaps they are in a loving committed relationship at 17. Mm-hmm. They don't really want to get pregnant, but they've done the ring thing or something where they promise they won't.
Until
they're married.
Right. There was a trend with that.
There was, and they're the ones with the higher STI and pregnancy rate because they can't tell their parents, they can't tell anybody that
interesting,
they're actually sexually active. And so they have a higher rate. And the more education we as you can tell I'm a little passionate about.
Yeah, it's awesome. This is perfect.
The young people, the better off they are in the long run because they have better tools to make better decisions, and they're going to wait longer.
That's great.
But if we pretend like they're not going to have sex, and we do abstinence only, well, just don't have sex until you're married, then it's a non-issue. Well, I'm sorry.
It doesn't say, yeah, that doesn't make any sense. I mean, it's very convenient. You're like, what? What if I never get married? Yeah.
And that's the other thing. If you want to use the abstinence only until marriage argument, okay, fine, but someday they are going to get married, and they still might not want to have a baby right away. They still need to know these tools, and they still need to know what a healthy relationship is like. They still need to understand how this whole sexual thing works, whether you wait till you're married or not. And I do want to point out that in comprehensive sex ed, we do still teach that abstinence is the one and only way not mm-hmm. to get pregnant, not to get an STI. That's still taught, and I think people are afraid when we teach comprehensive that we're saying, oh, just go out and have sex, you know, but just protect yourself. No. We're still teaching them abstinence is the best way, but not everybody chooses that. And it's a value system. It's when you're in a relationship. Whatever your path is taking you, here's how you're going to be safe. And as a nurse and as an educator, I want these young people to grow up safe.
I agree with that. With that, let's go ahead and segue into the topics I've picked today. And we talked a little bit about the whole Olympic gymnastics sex scandal that's been going around. So far, right. Per my research that I've been doing, there have been 348 victims who were molested as young as 6 years old. Larry Nassar, he's a teen doctor of 29 years. He is now going to be serving 60 years in prison. And his victims are more than 100 victims. The other victims are other coaches and other teen doctors that were found to be molesting these Olympic girls and also some males as well. And let's see, so he did plead guilty in July to child pornography charges in federal court, and that's what he's serving the 6 years for. He's going to go ahead and have another hearing as well and stuff. And it's sad, I was just listening to these victims' impact statements that they were doing, and I just was like, the thing that kept going through my head was like, these kids, teens, or whichever, were reporting the molestation. I mean, what he was doing was he was treating them for sprains or injuries. And so he was sticking his fingers in the females up their vagina and saying that this is part of the exam. So they didn't know any better. Some of them just was like, okay. You know, it did feel uncomfortable to them. They didn't understand it. They didn't like it. Some did tell their parents. Some did, of course, tell their coaches, or coaches didn't believe them or didn't want to believe them. They said some of the coaches did know this was going on. The parents I was reading didn't believe them, you know, which I was so heartbreaking. And some of these parents felt terrible that they didn't believe their children for reporting these molestation cases. I mean, because they trusted him as a sports doctor. It's the Olympic team, you know. They should be well cared for. And, of course, they should be, you know, maybe they're lying because they don't want to go to practice or who knows what. But it was disgusting to me, and it opens up the case on why parents should be talking to their kids about sex very openly to understand. I mean, physicians, we don't do vag exams. You know, unless there's something wrong, or if they are having active sex, you know, then they should be seeing an OBGYN yearly, getting their pap exams, this and that. So we need to also teach what are normal exams, you know, because that obviously you're having your Olympic team coach giving you a vag exam. Bizarre. Not right.
Right.
Not at 13, not at 6. So
I agree. This feeds into the argument again of talking to your kids. My argument is start at birth. And I know you're not going to be saying, oh, a penis goes into a vagina, you know, when they're babies. But what you are doing when you're changing your diaper, you're going, this is your penis, this is your vulva, this is your vagina.
Exactly.
And they're newborns. They don't know what you're saying. But you are practicing verbalizing these words. Because we're not used to that. Our culture doesn't teach us it's okay to say vagina or penis.
It's very true.
As evidenced in my seventh grade students, penis, you know, giggle, giggle, giggle. But, granted, it is a funny word, but it is a body part that we need to talk about and make it part of our normal everyday, not conversation, but as our verbiage, our words that we use. So we get used to, you know, with our babies, we get used to saying those words and by 2 years, 3 years old, we're having conversations, you know. I itch down there. Where do you itch? Well, my penis itches. Okay, let me know. They've got the language so that, and the other argument for this too is if there is any kind of abuse going on or molestation, we need to make sure we are all speaking the same language. For example, you call a little boy's penis his pee-pee. All of a sudden he says, so-and-so is touching my pee-pee. Well, we're going to go to the police or a healthcare provider. Mm-hmm. And then they have to actually get in the kid's head and say, what do you mean by pee-pee? If we use the words penis, there's no question. All know what they're talking about. Somebody touched their penis or their vagina or their vulva. We get that. We have that link. We have that conversation. We take action. Instead of trying to decipher, well, he doesn't really know what he's talking about. Having said that, as a parent, there's nothing wrong with pet names for body parts because heaven knows, I mean, I'd say save the top.
Right.
You know, and I think it's not really, I think, we are who we are. So it's okay to have pet names, but we need to make sure that the front line of defense, right away, we know the appropriate body parts and we're not embarrassed to say that. So we start there.
And absolutely.
I think that's really important. The other thing is, you mentioned it was this position of power. And this
yes.
is not just with child abuse, but with, you look at our political figures lately who are using positions of power to pay off women. Or, you know, this is nothing new. This has been going on. Obviously, we know about positions of power. You talk to my mom, who's in her 70s, and oh, Kim, this is how it's always been. Men have always done this. Well, no more.
You know, right.
We're not putting up with this anymore. And we now have the conversation, especially with these gymnasts who have come out and said, this is what happened. And parents are going, gosh,
yes,
this was going on. And the doctor told me, no way, and I believed them. So we're finally
right.
having these conversations. I think we are at this pivotal point in history. That conversations are going to change.
I agree.
Dialogue is switching out, and now we're believing young people.
I definitely.
We've got to start at birth. We've got to give them the word.
I agree. Using the
what's going on.
Using the anatomically correct verbiage, you know. I still have parents coming in and they're like, his p-p-p-p, and I go, you mean penis? Like, it is what it is, you know. And you know, let's use that so that it's okay, you know, and it's accepted in our society. We need to start that. I pulled an article which I thought was very interesting, and it was written in 2015, and it was in the Journal of Interpersonal Violence. And it's how youth serving organizations enable acquaintance molesters. So this is very, very common that these volunteers are in organizations, abuse scandals reveals common patterns of behavior among paid and volunteer staff in organizations that did not enact comprehensive proactive strategies. Faith in the organization blinded staff to the likelihood of abuse. Isn't that interesting? And then faith in these physicians, like, why would a physician ever do this? You know, well, he's a human being, and who knows what's going on in his head. And I pulled another article on the Journal of Child Sex Abuse. And, you know, what does it say? Misinterpreting children's behavior and intentions could lead to sexually abusive behavior toward children. And it also suggested in here that these perpetrators, you know, are socially different from everyone else. Their brains are different. And also either they were molested or they came from a molestation-based family. Like, there was a molester in their family, which is very, very interesting to me as well. And my takeaway from all of this, before we proceed to the next one, is just that parents need to be alert. You know, if someone is not, you just don't like a person, you don't know why, that's your intuition telling you something's off. Listen to your child. You know, team sports should be fun. I have been hearing so much drama about the Olympic gymnastics team, how strict it was, and about their diet and all that stuff. For me, you know, and I was an athlete myself in high school. I swam, and it was always fun. You know, hey, I didn't come in first, you know. That was never my goal. My goal was to have fun and to get exercise and to be with my friends. And, you know, the minute it stops being fun, the minute anything stops being fun with me, I just walk away. You know, and I can't believe these kids were, they kept going with that. I was just watching the snowboarding Olympics, and there was this kid who was 17 years old. His name is Red. He was from Denver. He won the gold medal. He just looked like he was having so much fun, and then he's just over it. He's like, yeah, I won the gold, and I'm over it. I'm going to go back to just being snowboarding myself. I can, you know, yeah, because it's probably so rigorous to train for the Olympics. Why not when he could go and have fun and make movies and make more money, you know? So that's that.
I love that. Yeah. Watch your kids. You know, if they have any subtle changes, they might not have the words, the verbiage to put into, somebody's touching me and I don't feel comfortable. Watch your kid. If there's any changes in their personality and their interests and just any subtle differences, you know, ask them and tell them it's okay, because they could be threatened. If you tell your parents, I'll do blah. Make sure you tell them no harm can come to them because I'm here for you. So you definitely need to watch your kids, because you're right. You know what? Every kid who's in sport is not going to become an Olympian. You know that. So let them have fun.
Exactly.
Try something else.
Exactly.
I had a daughter. All three of my girls I thought would be ballerinas. So like, well, my second one, by the time she was eight, every time I'd go into the ballet studio, she would roll her eyeballs and go, oh my God, how much more of this do I have to endure for? Okay, one last recital. We're coming towards the end. One last recital to entertain your mother. I can see all three of my girls dancing. Do whatever you want. And she became an equestrian.
That's awesome.
Their thing. I know, right? And she's amazing. She's the one who surfs, and
that's great.
Snowboarding, and she ballet. Oh my God, I can't believe I even made her do that. Shame on me. But you gotta let your kids have
fun. It's so.
You gotta let your kids have fun. So glad you said that.
So, so true. And now we're going to go into segueing into the school shootings and stuff, because I know you're the Illinois School Health Association. So you, I want to hear your take on this. So basically, I'm just going to read some headlines here in some of the headlines that I've been seeing in the media. It's not even 2 full months into 2018, and there have already been 17 school shootings, more than twice as many as this time last year. The American Psychological Association was saying, don't blame school shootings on mental illness, because President Trump was also tweeting that this kid, Nicholas Cruz, was probably mentally ill. And so it was an interesting counter, but then I also pulled an article from Time magazine, and it went over his mental illness. And basically the kid, Nicholas Cruz, who was about 19 years old, his father died in 2004. He had just lost his mother in November. He had lots of psychological issues. He suffered from ADHD. His mother called the police on him several times, like I think 36 times, something like that. I'm not sure if I'm saying the number accurate. But yeah, and other students were reporting issues with him and stuff. So what is your take on that? Have you started discussions in your groups, your meetings with other school teachers about this?
So the issue with this is, I think mental health is a big issue. I do. But I think I have a different perspective on guns, too. I'm not a gun person. I think that, personally, I think no person, no human needs to have access to a semi-automatic rifle. I just think that's stupid. But when it comes to mental health, yeah, you know what? Young people and adults are slipping through the cracks. And it is really difficult. We don't have enough government funding to help young people. As we saw with this young man, he sounds like he was really sick. He needed to be away and for his own protection and everybody else's. It's a shame that he went through the cracks, but there are so many other people. I mean, just walking around any city, you can see people with violent tendencies.
Yes.
I don't know. I don't know what the answer is to this. I do know that there is not enough funding to help people with mental health.
It's very true.
There just is not enough funding. And in the schools, it's great because typically, I think young people in the schools are caught. There are opportunities for counseling. There are alternative schools. I know the schools do work really, really hard with young people, typically, to get them help. But again, there's only so much a school can do because
Right. Eventually
the kid goes out into society, and there need to be other things in place for these people, all people. And to give them access to guns, any gun, is travesty.
I agree. You know, he shouldn't have been able to buy a semi-automatic weapon. I think that's really wrong. I think it's crazy. I still do believe in the right to bear arms. You know, I don't want that right taken away from us, because I think then we're going into police state. This is my opinion. I don't believe semi-automatic weapons. I mean, I have been held up by gunpoint. I used to work at a bank when I was 19 years old. I have. And it was is it a 57 special? I still kind of remember the gun because I remembered it so vividly, and I had to tell the FBI agent what it looked like. But it was a very traumatic experience for me because it was a kid that held the gun on me. It was a 13-year-old kid. It was a bank takeover. Yes. And so they had found the kids within hours of the bank being taken over, and I got whisked away in an FBI car with one of my coworkers, and we had to go identify these kids at their hideout where they were. It was like some type of gang or something like that. But it was very traumatic for me. I did have post-traumatic stress, but I still do believe in the right to bear arms and stuff like that. Now, that being said, semi-automatic weapons, no. I mean, that it's those are war weapons. It's like, we don't want to go into that. Interesting facts that I came up with and some data that before 1999, we didn't have any police shootings. I mean, not police shootings, school shootings, right? Very none. But it was after Columbine that all these, it started this trend. And so for some reason in 2018, we've doubled what it was last year, and we're only in 2 months of the year. So it's very interesting. I did pull some articles, Journal of Public Health in 2015, Mental Illness, Mass Shootings, and the Politics of American Firearms. So studies are being done on this, on just the shootings that we've had. And here we go. From 1966 to 2012, 31% of gunmen and mass shootings worldwide were American. So this is something, it's very American-based as well. And it's like, it doesn't happen in other countries. Like, kids are not going shooting up their classrooms in other countries. Like, what's going on there? Why are we so different, you know?
That is scary. Well, a couple of things. Like, I know in Australia, they had one school shooting about, I don't know, they immediately have the gun control issue. So they've had no mass shootings since then. So that's been one thing. But I think the biggest change is media.
Yes.
The games. But I see the ads on TV. It's like, oh my God, they're teaching these kids to shoot.
Yes.
And they have, like, again, I'm only watching commercials, but they have like these sexy women cartoon character on there that they're blooding up and they're sexualizing and they're shooting. And I'm like, oh my God, these are like young people watching this. If this isn't changing the brain, I don't know what.
Exactly. Thank you for bringing that up, because this kid, Nicholas Cruz, his mom took away his Xbox when she was alive and he went berserk. She had to call the police, you know. And I have these kids in my clinic who come in who are gamers, you know, and they're so antisocial. They don't know how to talk to people. They're heavy set, whatever. And it's like, I sit there and I tell the parents, no games. Oh, they start freaking out. It's almost like you're taking away a crack. Yes, you're taking away the crack addict's crack. Something is wrong there. And I tell these parents, these games are addictive. They change the neurotransmitters in the brain. I mean, it's changing their vision of society. And of course, they're going to be more violent. You know, that's not a surprise. I mean, I was sitting. It's not to them. It's normal. Oh my gosh! I was dating a guy who was a gamer, and this was recent, probably about a year ago. And we went to the Griffith Park Observatory at night, and he had never been there. And we walk in, and he was like, "Oh, this is just like in that video game." I forgot what it was, what video game he was talking about, but he had said it. And I was just like, what? Like, he's like, oh, it's exactly the same, because it was some virtual reality video game. I was like, are you kidding me? I was like, it was weird. I was like, that's strange. But also, I was sitting at the juice, at a juice place the other day, and I was waiting for my juice to be made. And there was a kid who was 7 years old, and he was sitting at a table by himself, and he had a phone with him, and he was watching something on his phone. And all of a sudden, I hear bang, bang, bang. And I turn around and I look at him, and he looks at me, and he has his face like, oh shit, I shouldn't be watching this. And this lady just saw me. And he quickly turns it off and puts it down. And I was like, oh my gosh, he's watching some, you know, something violent with shooting. But our media, I mean, our Netflix is full of violence and darkness. And it's like, I am not surprised why we have this big, huge, you know, influx of kids shooting up schools. So, yeah.
It's sort of like anatomically correct body parts. Start young. Don't allow it. And another thing, you mentioned the guy that you dated watching that. So if you were to become a parent down the road, to him it's normal.
Yeah.
He's going to be watching this while the boy or child is growing up. And it just, the kids are bombarded with this. I mean, my kids grew up on Barney.
Yeah, exactly.
I would have ever allowed that. We never watched violent movies. To this day, none of my children, my husband or myself, none of us are into that. It's so.
Yeah, I'm not. I think video games are not my thing, you know, and it's like. It's like we had a little bit of Nintendo Atari growing up. That was very different than what it is now. Now it's more virtual reality. Now you're playing with other people. You're shooting at people. It's just, I mean, some of these video games just look so real. and stuff. So it's just...
It's hard. And the thing with parents is, you know, you were mentioning the parent who says, oh, I can't take away his video gaming because it's, he goes crazy. Well, here's the deal. They live in your house.
Exactly. Yeah. I say that all the time.
Yeah, you know,
I'm like, who's the parent? Who's the parent? You know, and I always give them that. I was like, who's the parent? I hear you.
I've been there when you tell your kids, and it's really hard, and I get all that. But honestly, if you start young and say, okay, you can have your phone during the day, but at night it goes here. So even when they're in high school, college, adults, they know that their phone is put away. Otherwise, it is an addiction. I'm usually got my phone in my hands too.
Exactly.
I understand that, but we have to teach our kids from a young age. It's a whole new world of putting the phone away at night. Don't need to be connected all night. That's sleep time. Same with games. These are not the kind of games you need to watch.
Exactly.
If you do, it's only for half an hour, not 16 hours. And we've got to put these parameters in.
Yeah, so true.
To do that. It's not easy, but you must start doing that.
True. And now I kind of want to go into a more... lighter note. Want to end this whole segment on a light note, fun note. And this Tide Pod Challenge, what the? I didn't even know this was a thing. I have been working in Palm Springs, and at our vacation home in Palm Springs, there is no internet, there is no cable. I mean, it's very primitive. So they have this TV that has only like 3 or 4 channels on it. So that's where I watch the news. I don't get regular cable or TV in my home here in Burbank. So I was watching the 2 or 3 channels of the news one day because I was bored, and I see this Tide Pod Challenge. I was like, what is that? And this was in January, and I was like, what is that all about? I was interested about that. And then I, you know, in preparing for this segment, I was pulling data, and it was very interesting. But I was asking my patients about it. I'm like, are you doing the Tide Pod Challenge? And they were like looking at me like I was some crazy person. What? They're like, the Tide Pod. They're like, oh, that's dumb. And I go, I know, good answer. But it's weird. So basically what it is these kids are going on YouTube and they're eating these Tide Pods, and they're very multicolored and pretty jelly-like things. And in 2018, so far, there have been 37 reported cases among teenagers, half of them intentional. So these are intentional ingestions. I mean, it was so bad that there was a press release from the American Association of Poison Control Centers about the potential poison exposure to a single load laundry pack. Okay, so basically during the first 5 years, poison control centers have received well over 50,000 calls relating to liquid laundry detergent packet exposures, while unintentional misuse by children 5 and under accounted for the majority of these calls. A recent trend among teenagers ingesting these packets and uploading videos to various internet platforms, including video sharing websites, social media, and vlogging platforms, has caused significant concerns among poison control centers. So it's all very interesting, but I found this site. Okay, and it was a YouTube site, and they brought up a really good point, because before January, we weren't really seeing this, but I guess Tide put out this commercial, and it was with this football player. His name is Rob Gronkowski, okay? So he is from the New England Patriots, and this commercial, I guess, started airing around January 14th, so... Before this commercial aired, they were saying this guy did all the stats, and he's noticed that maybe there was about 200 Tide Pod podcasts or on YouTube, you know, of kids doing this challenge, okay? But after this commercial aired, he started noticing there were 1,500 per week. There was 1,500, so it increased. So this guy, and we're going to go ahead and roll a little bit of the YouTube commercial that this guy Rob Gronkowski is on, and he's telling kids, no, don't ingest this, right?
What the heck is going on, people? Use Tide Pods for washing, not eating.
But more kids started doing these challenges. It's kind of crazy. It's kind of the copycat effect. That's what they were saying. When you're watching other people do deviant behaviors, it makes it okay for you. I think it's very interesting that this all happened right before the Super Bowl, and Tide had more commercials on for the Super Bowl. So I don't know. What's our media doing there? It's very, very interesting. But don't be doing this. It is very media driven. I mean, don't be doing these challenges because this stuff is very caustic. I mean, I used to work at Children's Hospital in the Department of Anesthesia, so we used to prep the kids before they would go into surgery. And I would get these kids that when they were two or three had accidentally ingested bleach or laundry detergent or whatever it was. And so now they had these esophageal strictures because their esophagus was so corroded, or their vocal cords had gotten corroded. So they have to come in because their the strictures close off the esophagus. They have to come in to get an EGD, esophagogastroduodenoscopy, and open up those strictures so that they can swallow and eat and breathe normally. You know, it's really ridiculous. So don't do it. But what's your take on it? Any thoughts for you?
Yeah. You know, we've all done crazy things because, as we know, the frontal lobe is still developing, and that's what controls our judgment, our risk-taking, and all that. And it takes time for that to develop. In the meantime, young people are trying to act cool. They want friends. They want attention. And it used to be you could do something crazy in the backyard, like, say, jump off a roof of a shed into a...
Yes, we did that.
With your two friends.
Right.
Say you're an idiot because you just broke your foot. Move on.
Right,
now,
yes.
Media. And you've got these kids out there who want the attention, who want the notoriety, and now they've got millions of people watching.
Right.
So, you know, hold my beer and watch this. So now they're putting the Tide Pod. I'm sure if you ask any one of those kids, they're going to say, gosh, I wish I had done that. That was really stupid. But now they've got a larger audience. And they're risk takers, and they're kind of, you know, popular and get friends. And they're
right.
Trying to identify who they are and how are they cool. And with media, with the computer, it just makes it that much easier. So that's another downside of what we're seeing now. People doing positive things like giving food to the homeless as a challenge.
Exactly. That's a good one. I like that one.
Nice new challenge.
Yes.
Oh, right. But they love that watching it.
Exactly.
Connectedness that some of these young people don't have, and it's another way to connect, but we need to teach them that there are outlets to do that instead of being a risk taker. That's in an unhealthy way. We need to change it to a healthier way. But Allison, like you said,
yeah.
But
I
starts young.
I absolutely agree with you and stuff. So final thoughts from you, Kim, where can people get your book? Teen World Confidential.
Thanks. My book is available on Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, any of the online outlets. I also have a line of cards that are great for parents when they want to open up a line of communication with a young person.
That's a great idea.
They especially. I'm really excited about them. I just released them.
Fun.
I designed them in mind for the LGBT population. However, anybody can use it. In fact, I've had my girlfriends buy them for other girlfriends to offer support. So I found that option as well. I've partnered with JP Naturals out in San Francisco, and she makes an organic deodorant that's really awesome.
Oh, nice.
We have a kit for parents called Don't Sweat the Talk.
Oh,
so
I love it.
On my website as well. I know, it's really cool. It's
And your website is Teen World Confidential, right? Just Google that and it should come up. Awesome. And your Twitter.
And I'm on all the social media.
Yeah, and you're on Twitter as Teen World Confidential as well. Are you Instagram as well, right? Yes.
Yeah, it's TW.
Instagram.
And Facebook, of course. But sign up for my newsletter because every week I come out with new content, things that we're talking about that's current in the news to give you some insight.
Excellent. Thank you so much for being on the show. And now you get to go back and enjoy Hawaii. Have a Mai Tai.
Yes.
Have a fish taco for me at Duke's. Oh, so yummy. Anyway.
I want to.
Yes.
I want to.
Yes. Yes. Let me know how it goes. Well, thank you so much for being on the show. And thank you, audience members. Nurses get one CE for listening. Go to the survey on SurveyMonkey. Just click on iTunes and it'll take you to the survey. Fill out the survey. You get your certification for one CE. And please, go on iTunes, tell us what you think of the podcast. If you want to be a guest, go ahead and go to our Rogue Nurse Media website and connect with us on social media. Instagram, we're there, Rogue Nurse Media. And on Twitter, we're on as Nurses and Hypochondriacs. Thank you so much, everyone.